darling, here comes the sun. I say it's alright. It's alright. Here comes the sun.
This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web at kpfk.org and on your website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, where you can get podcasts, where you can go and see last week's show and hear last week's show and all. We have a terrific archives. You can check that out. And you can email me at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. And you can tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks. And maybe I'll get some tweets during the show today. So what we're going to try to do today, I am trying to shake it up. As you know, if you've been the host of a show or if you haven't, besides wanting to make it more interesting for your listeners, you want to make it more interesting for yourself. So I've done this now for 10 years, and I'm trying to see if I can flip the script on a few things. So today, we're going to try two features. One I've wanted to do a long time, which is called Sing Along With. Now, it's not Sing Along With Eric, but I'm going to be singing along with other people. And today, for instance, we're going to be singing two oldies from, and when I mean oldies, I mean oldies, Duke of Earl by Gene Chandler, of course. Duke of Earl by Gene Chandler. And then we're going to do In the Still of the Nights by the Five Satins. And no, I'm not as good as Rhapsody in Black. And next time we'll probably have there to help us. Then I'm going to read from you some scary, scary stuff from the New York Times. It's called Progress Seen on Warming. This is this Monday. With a caveat. A caveat means a warning. Nation's goals still fall short, scientists say. But this is a terrifying, terrifying story. That's not what the headline says. The story is that the world is moving towards a 6-degree heat by the 21st century. And again, the problem is, folks, that I'm not sure any of you really give a damn. Know the difference between 0.8, 1, 2, 4, and I'll get to that in a minute. And in the third, we're going to try this feature called Revolutionary Weight Warriors, because I'm on a diet. So I figured, you know, like all these other people, I'll make my diet into a club. You know, we can all go on a diet together, or we could discuss my diet. Got some very nice tweets on that. When somebody said diet, they meant the diet high school, which is much more important in Chicago. But I'm talking about a losing weight diet, so I'm calling it the Revolutionary Weight Warriors. I'm the only member so far, and I'm barely hanging in there, but I am losing some weight. So I'm going to talk about all my great theories about it's not obesity, it's depression and oppression as the problem. And we're going to discuss, maybe people will call in and we'll all set a weight together, and every Tuesday we'll honestly discuss if we made our weight. We'll discuss what was going on with us and what did we do good and what could we do better. But to try to set the mood, we're going to start with some oldies, starting with Duke of Earl by Gene Chandler.
Duke of Earl, 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 Duke of Earl.
As I walk through this world, nothing can stop.
To In the Still of the Night by the Five Satins.
In the still of the night, I held you, I held you tight. Love you so, promised I'll never let you go in the still of the night.
In the still of the night,
I remember, I remember, I remember, I remember.
So that's what we do. We sing along. We're going to try to do it every week. You can send me at Eric at Voices from the Front Lines, or at Eric Mann Speaks, suggestions on songs that you want to put on next week that we can all sing along to, that you like to sing along to. And most likely we'll take them and we'll sing along with them. So let's try to maybe build that into how we open up every show. And especially because a lot of the stuff that we do talk about, Voices from the Front Lines, is very difficult, very hard, and it's always good to start with a good song. So let me frame the conversation. This show, the main part of the show today, is a terrifying, absolutely terrifying set of new news about climate that's being portrayed as so normal that it's scaring the heck out of me. The short of it, without any elaboration, is that the world's governments have been talking about, and I don't know if you've been following these numbers, that they claim that right now the Earth is less than 1 degree warmer Celsius than it was in 1850. That is to say, it was at one point called 0.8. Now it's 0.85. And at the United Nations, which we're going to go to, the Strategy Center, basically from December 1st to December 15th, in Paris, United Nations Framework on Climate Change Conference, the world's governments are all going to get together and try to come up with proposals to keep the world's temperature rising no more than 2 degrees Celsius above the 1850 levels. Now, I'm going to go into and continue to go into the very frankly deceptive program that the president is coming up with, but frankly, all the governments coming into Paris, it looks like, are coming up with either deceptive or self-deceptive programs, because they're all claiming, and the scientists are claiming, that we have to create like a firewall, as it were, a double entendre there, at 2 degrees, that we cannot have the world any more than 2 degrees Celsius over 1850 levels. So you might think, well, wait a minute, it doesn't sound too bad. We're at 0.85, that's less than 1. 2 is the maximum. How bad could it be? And the sad things, listeners, is that because there's such now what the Pope is calling rapidification, or rapidly moving geometric proportional increases in heat of first the atmosphere and then the water, that the 1.5, which people were hoping for, is long gone. And the 2, which people were saying is the so-called firewall or the Chinese wall or the wall that cannot be breached, apparently is just definitely being breached. So when Barbara Lott Holland and I were in Bonn meeting with a lot of the environmental groups, the good ones from around the world, in the Global Network to Demand Climate Justice group that we're a part of, somebody said very casually, when do we tell them that 2% is impossible because it's already, there's too much in the hopper? Well, that's the first time I heard it, and I was terrified, because here the governments are saying we have to do no less than 2%, but in fact, they all know that there's going to be more. So why, I was trying to figure out, is that true? I mean, I was going to try to do more scientific research and meet with more people about, is it really true that the 2, forget about 1.5, is impossible, partly because, as you know, it's what's called in the pipeline, which means a lot of the greenhouse gases that have already been emitted have not yet had the heating effect, even though they're in the atmosphere. So that means that the heat that they're going to generate is already unstoppable. So now I'm going to read you an article. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines. I'm going to read you an article in Monday, September 28th, New York Times, that I swear is the most terrifying article I've read on climate. So I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to interpret it. And I may do some interpretation along the way. It says, progress seen on warming with a caveat. Caveat means with a warning, so warming with a warning. Nation's goal still falls short, scientists say. This is by Justin Gillis and, oh my God, Somini Sengupta. I just saw that. Who worked with the Strategy Center when we started it in 1990. That's an interesting story. The pledges that countries are making to battle climate change would still allow the world to heat up by more than 6 degrees Fahrenheit. A new analysis shows a level that scientists say is likely to produce catastrophes ranging from food shortages to widespread extinctions of plant and animal life. Yet in the world of global climate progress, that counts as progress. Now, one second, let me do my own work. I still don't know how to convey Fahrenheit to centigrade. So one thing that's confusing to me here is that when they're saying 6 degrees, they're not saying 6 degrees Celsius. They're saying 6 degrees Fahrenheit. And I know somebody can tweet me how many degrees Celsius is 6 degrees Fahrenheit. At Eric Mann Speaks, please. Send it over to me and I'll read it. Yet in the world of global climate progress, that counts as progress. The new figures were released Monday in New York as a week of events related to climate change comes to an end. The highlight was an urgent moral appeal at the United Nations on Friday by Pope Francis, urging countries to reach, quote, fundamental and effective agreements when they meet in Paris in December to try to strike a new global climate deal. For much of this year, countries have been issuing pledges about how much emissions they are willing to cut in coming decades. With a plan announced by Brazil on Sunday, every major country except India has now made a commitment to take to the Paris conference. Let me take you a minute on that. What's going on in the Paris conference is that we had hoped that the Paris conference was going to come up with binding agreements, you know, that everybody would have to cut their emissions by 15% or 20% or 50%. But instead, they've come up with what they call INDCs, Intended Nationally Determined Contributions. We've gone over this, but we're going to go over it a lot until you can say INDC and know what's wrong with it. Intended means governments surely show up and say, well, I intend to reduce my emissions by 30%. I don't guarantee it. I intend to. Nationally determined means that every country is going to come up. There's not going to be an agreement. If Brazil wants to do one thing, if the United States wants to do another thing, they're free to do so. And contributions means that's their intended contribution to solving the problem. You can understand already the problem if everybody's going to show up with an intended nationally determined contribution, that we're in a lot of trouble because it means nothing is compulsory. An analysis by researchers at Climate Interactive, a group whose calculations are used by American negotiators and by numerous other governments, is expected to release Monday and was provided in advance to the New York Times. It shows that the collective pledges would reduce the warming of the planet at century's end to about 6.3 degrees. If the national commitments are fully honored, from an expected 8.1 degrees Fahrenheit if emissions continue on their present course. So they're already talking about 6 degrees and 8 degrees. 8 degrees if nothing stops, and the great improvement is 6 degrees. That would be the biggest reduction in the history of global climate politics, and a sign that 20 years of disappointing negotiations may be giving way to an era where countries start to move the needle on a projected global temperature. Yet the analysis also shows that the nations are still a far way from meeting their own shared target set in 2010 of limiting global warming to about 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. That level of warming, while potentially producing dire effects on agriculture, sea level, and the natural world, might be at least tolerable, some experts believe. The pledges countries have made are a big step forward, but not sufficient, not even close, said John Sturman. Making any serious pledge has been a political challenge in many countries, including the United States, where President Obama has encountered vociferous opposition in Congress. Everyone is now convinced that there'll be agreement in Paris, President Francois Hollande of Paris said Sunday, but the question is what kind of agreement? All right, so do you get it that they're going in to Paris with the plans to reduce the rest of the world's temperature to 6 degrees Fahrenheit when it's already at 3 degrees Fahrenheit? Now, we're going to read 6 degrees, so I'm going to take it at 4 degrees, okay? 4 degrees. What would happen if the world moved to 4 degrees Celsius? And I'm reading from the book 6 degrees, our future on a hotter planet. But again, he's talking about 6 degrees Celsius, not 6 degrees Fahrenheit. To say that Alexandria had a long history is something of an understatement. Named after its Greek warrior founder, Alexander the Great, this Egyptian city soon grew to be one of the largest and most influential in the ancient world, second only to Rome in power and architectural glory. Its most famous building was the legendary Pharaohs of Alexandria Lighthouse, built in the 3rd century BC and traditionally considered one of the 7 wonders of the ancient world, along with the Great Pyramid of Giza and the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Now, this is about 4 degrees Celsius. Atop the tower rose a statue of Poseidon, Lord of the Seas, a god who was said to ride through the oceans in a chariot from a great giant clamshell and pulled by seahorses. Alexandrians worshipped Poseidon for understandably self-interested reasons. His power to cause storms and shipwrecks could send hundreds of men to a watery grave in seconds. The sea was a great power in the land. Little remains of those times today, and Poseidon knows why. Unlike Rome, which managed to preserve much of its antiquity, even as a thriving modern city grew above the ruins, only some Roman baths, a few catacombs, and a single granite pillar remained of ancient Alexandria. Most of the rest was reclaimed by the sea as the Nile Delta, on which the ancient city was built, slowly subsided. Some of its finest treasures have been recovered from the seabed offshore after being submerged for centuries in Poseidon's watery grass. The waves are still encroaching as global warming adds a further toll to the subsiding land. I'm reading from Mark Lyness's 6 Degrees, and this is the chapter of what happens if the world gets to 4 degrees. There's a lot at stake. Now, a sprawling metropolis of 4 million people, modern Alexandria's 2 harbors form the busiest seaport in the country and support 40% of Egyptians' industry. Summer tourism adds another 1 million visitors, making it the 2nd largest city in Egypt after Cairo. But in the 4-degree world, with global sea levels 0.5 meter or more above current levels, Alexandria's long lifespan will be drawing to a close. Even in today's climate, a substantial part of the city lies below sea level, and by the latter part of this century, a terminal inundation will have begun. A study conducted by scientists at the city's university suggested that by 2050, now that's 35 years from now, a rise in sea levels of 50 centimeters would displace 1.5 million people and cause $35 billion of damage. Indeed, as the sea begins to encroach across ever parts of the Nile Delta, millions more will be evicted from their homes in other cities like Rosetta and Port Said. Beaches, wetlands, and agriculture areas will all be submerged, devastating an area that's the heart of Egypt's economy, a part of the world that's always attracted conquerors from Alexander to Napoleon, will be facing its final and unvanquishable foe. Of course, Egypt will not be alone in suffering the effects of a global phenomenon like sea level rise. And to our voices listeners, I think we've been trying to go over, I'm going to continue reading, but you're hearing about sea level rise. Close your eyes again and see if you can remember at least some of the radical changes that climate change is bringing about. I'm going to give up the list that I know and see how many of them you remember, okay? The first, of course, is sea level rise, because as the water heats, the sea level rises. The second is what's called extreme weather events, because as the heat rises, for instance, the tumultuous nature of the storms coming off the ocean become Category 5 hurricanes instead of Category 2. In L.A. lately, we just had a pretty strong heat wave. I think a lot of people noticed, and this was in September, a very high level of heat, an uncomfortable, not unbearable, but very uncomfortable level of heat. I think you know that in Paris, about 10 years ago, there was a massive heat wave in which about 15,000 people died. This is because of global warming. When I ask you, again, close your eyes, of those 15,000 people, what kind of people died? And I think we discussed it this Saturday at the Strategy Center meeting, mainly older people, people that were already ill, didn't have strong immune systems, and of course, poor. Very, very few rich white people died in Paris. So you're going to have heat strokes, heat waves, you're going to have rising waters, you're going to have floods. Floods are going to take away a lot of the arable land and the topsoil, and they're going to create tremendous soil erosions, followed by droughts. So the droughts, which I don't know if you know, but they're talking about the Central Valley of California in 20 or 30 years not being able to grow agriculture because it already requires so much more water in order to irrigate it. So when we're reading all this stuff about 4 degrees and 5 degrees, it's very real stuff that's going to happen to us in our lifetime, in our children's lifetime, and very clearly in our grandchildren's lifetime. So when we get to what we're going to do about it, I hope you understand that we are going to Paris right now, the Strategy Center. Manuel Criollo, Ashley Franklin, Barbara Lett Holland, Channing Martinez, and myself, as part of a world movement to at least tell the government and tell the United States government that we know what you're doing is frankly a deception. What you're doing is you're lying, because it says right in the New York Times that you're already planning for a 6-degree and an 8-degree world, and you're not telling us. So let me try to explain and explain and explain again the campaign that we're trying to get President Obama to address. And when you get on the phone, we can talk about weight loss seriously, but we also hopefully can talk about cooling the planet and indicate that, or talk about oldies, since there are three different chapters to this book. The president is going to Paris promising to reduce U.S. emissions by 28%. Now, one of the things that I'm asking you as listeners to understand is, do you have any understanding of what the president is talking about? For instance, the Strategy Center is asking for a reduction of 50% of all U.S. emissions of 1990 levels starting now and ending in 2025. What I'm concerned about, again, to our listeners, and I wonder if you're out there, is the president is saying he plans to cut emissions by 28% of 2005 levels. Now, do you know the difference? The world in the UN is using 1990 levels. Well, the reason why that's important is that we even have the same starting line, forget about finishing line. So the Europeans are saying that they want to cut emissions by 40% of 1990 levels. The third world is talking about at least 50%, not that they want to cut, but that they're asking the United States and Europe to cut, of 1990 levels. And the president is saying he wants to cut 28% of 2005 levels. Do you understand how profoundly deceptive that is? I'm calling it American deceptionism, because he's not even agreeing to cut comparable numbers to what everybody else is. So what's the difference between if you say you're going to cut it from 2005 levels or you're going to cut it from 1990 levels? Well, the difference is that instead of it being a 28% cut, it's only a 14% cut. That is to say, there's been so much increased pollution, so much increased climate change from 1990 to 2005, that if you started at 2005 when everybody else is starting at 1990, you're basically saying, I want credit for all those greenhouse gases. I don't plan to get rid of those. I want to start the counting at 2005. But you're only in 2015, so that's insane. So the first thing we are trying to build a movement on is to get people to simply tell the president, join the rest of the world. Everybody else is starting at 1990. And don't hustle us. 28% is really 14%. So just say, I want to reduce my emissions from 14% of 1990 levels. The second thing that's scary is we're saying starting now, and all the governments are sort of saying they want to start in 2020 because it's going to take them a while to bring their plans into gear. But this is terrifying because you can't wait another 5 years. Things are moving, as you see from the New York Times, so profoundly rapidly that why would the government say they need another 5 more years when they were supposed to have been doing this since 1980, certainly by 1992 at the Rio conference? So that's another trick bag, which is when we're going to Bonn and to Paris, the governments are saying, I agree to reduce my emissions, but I don't plan to start until 2020. We got to get it. No, 2015, that means starting now. The third number is the $10 billion into the Green Climate Fund. In this article in the New York Times, it says that what a lot of the governments are trying to do, third world governments, has asked the United States to give them money to change their technology. Because what do you think, listeners, the main fuel used in the third world is? Close your eyes. What's the main fuel? The answer is coal. What's the main fuel used in the United States? The main answer is gasoline. So the reason why the president is focusing on getting rid of coal-burning power plants is because coal is being phased out all over the world. So essentially what the government is doing in the United States is it's getting rid of, yes, its most polluting fuel, but the fuel that's on its way out anyway because of the market. So that's another U.S. deceptionalism. Now, the United States has agreed to put $3 billion into the Green Climate Fund. I urge you to go on www.blackcommentator.com and check out Barbalot Holland's article on the Green Climate Fund. 818-985-5735. What we're going to be trying to do is build a movement between now and Paris to say to the president that we're going to have a fight with you over the numbers. The first thing, Mr. President, is you're saying 2005. We're saying 1990. You must change it. Number two, you're always saying 14%, and we're saying 50%. Why 50%? Because that's the least amount. That's a big chunk. If you're trying to build a political movement, as I was telling to people Saturday, there's only three numbers that make sense to me. 0, 50%, and 100%. People move in big numbers, you know. Cut your problem by 50% or increase by 50%, you know, both. A 14% increase, do you think the average person in the streets can even remember that it's a 14%? Of course not. So we need a 50%. The next number is $10 billion, which is we want $10 billion put into the Green Climate Fund now to give to the third world. And the last number is now. So if you're interested, if you want to work on this campaign, so when we go to Paris, we can tell the president that some people in the United States are on to you. And very frankly, I'm scared. I'll tell you what one of the last things I'm scared about before we get to diets. 818-985-5735 is I am very worried that this president, who is moving slowly in the direction of some vague cuts in U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, is being given such a honeymoon, such a, what's the word, can't think of it, you know, he's being let off the hook. Because the Republicans say, well, I don't believe in climate change. Or the Republicans say, well, whatever the president comes back from Paris, I'm not going to do. And so a lot of people love to hate Republicans, but they don't like to stand up to Democrats. In this case, particularly a black Democrat. And a charming, if I may say. Yeah, I think so. A charming Democrat. And a Democrat that's talking the talk about climate change. And nobody's holding him accountable. We at the Strategy Center are trying. But let me tell you, it's a phenomenally uphill battle. We are going to be doing a lot of work in South OA in particular. If you're interested in working with us, if you're interested in just organizing some of your friends to say, I want to help you as you go to Paris, indicate that President Obama, we're on your case, we're with the Strategy Center, send me an email at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. We will get back to you about how you can work with us. And finally, again, I don't know, tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks and we'll get back to you as well. Okay, 818-985-5735. I'm just going to spend a few more minutes on our meeting of the Revolutionary Weight Warriors. if you know me, I invent things. I invented the Labor Community Strategy Center. I invented the bus riders union. I invented the campaign to keep Van Nuys open. I like to invent things, make things up that have never happened before. So I've been on Weight Watchers, which I really like, but I decided to do a new organization called Revolutionary Weight Warriors. I'm the only member in it so far. It's a lot of my organizations start out small. All good ideas usually start out with yourself, so, you know, I'd love to have a second member. Again, Eric at Voices from the Frontlines, I got a really great email that I'm very sorry I didn't bring with me, but somebody did at least email me from their car saying, yeah, about the blue cheese crumbles at Sizzler. And then my friend, Woodrow Coleman, he joined the club, but he thought the main point of the club was to go to Sizzler. So right after the show, he said, yeah, I heard it was a great show. I'm going to Sizzler. So, no, we're not trying to build business for Denny's and Sizzler and Trader Joe's. So I had a couple of thoughts. One thought I had is that I think it's really important today. You know, here's my weight. My weight today is 221.4. It's pretty good. I came back from Paris about 6-8 weeks ago, over 230. I went to this very beautiful clothing store. The guy took one look at me and said, oh, yes, you're very handsome. And he gave me a jacket so big that, as they say, Omar the tent maker might have made it. You know, it was boxy, beautiful black, expensive. It was almost like to cover all my sins. And I looked terrible in it. I tried to look good, but it was like, imagine it was just trying to say, oh, my God, given how big this guy is, what's the biggest jacket I got here? So I did buy it, and I plan to not wear it. I wore it once. Looked okay. But I figure I'm going to wear it when I get a lot thinner, and then it'll at least look super oversized. But there's nothing worse than an oversized jacket, and you also look oversized. So I'm down from, let's say, 233 down to 228. So my last weigh-in, and it is because of this show that's pushing me, trust me, is 221.8 or 6, I forget, this morning. 221, not bad. I got down to 219.8 over the weekend. I was really thrilled. Then I went up, and I got up to 223, and then I got mad at my diet. I said, well, the heck with it. You know, I was at 219, and I went back to 223. And then I realized, Eric, your diet is you made this thing up. So what do you mean you're going to quit your diet? The only option is you're going to get heavier. So that was an interesting insight, that you can't quit a diet, because whether you lose weight or not, the first thing is, wherever you are, don't get heavier. And I am losing weight. I am losing small amounts of weight. And then I got to realize I should relax. All I need to do is, really, every week, if you call into the show, if you're willing to, just call in and say, hey, this was my weight last week, and this is my weight this week. And most likely you'll call if you lost weight, and that'll be cool. And did you do anything interesting to lose weight? And then finally at 4:47, oh, good, I got three callers. I'm going to give you a recipe about a good soup that I think could be a weight loss soup. It's I got it from my daughter Melinda, who got it from my daughter Celia. It's basically a Trader Joe's soup, where you take the pre-existing lentils, they have carrots and onions and celery all chopped up together, and you throw in a can of chicken, whatever you call it, chicken broth. But if you know me, nothing, I always add to whatever the recipe. So I took that. So remember, it's a lentil soup. I added red potatoes, chopped them up really fine. I do eat meat, so I got those jalapeno chicken sausages, all from Trader Joe's. Chopped those up. I used olive oil. I fried up the sausages a little bit, fried up all the other ingredients. I added potatoes. I added, I like potatoes and lentils. I had the sausage. And then after it all cooked up, I did add the pre-cut green beans that I threw on the top after the soup was completely done. The soup is much better the second day. I mean, it just all blends in. I did put some wine in there and some salt and pepper. That was it. really good. I got it. Somebody could figure out what the calorie count is. I'll let you know next week. So I did a soup. I'm doing a lot of exercise. I'm doing a lot of work on global warming. I'm doing more yoga. And I'm interested to see how you're doing. So I'm going to start with Carlos from Carson. Hello, Carlos.
Hi, Eric. Listen, there's a lot of people out there, myself included, that believe that global warming is not being caused so much by emissions, but by technology. There's something called HAARP in Alaska. The United States owns, the Air Force owns a site over there in Alaska, and they have a technology called HAARP that sends electromagnetic waves to the jet current and can change can create any type of weather that they want. Droughts, hurricanes, earthquakes, all that stuff. And I think that the elitist families of the world are behind using that type of technology to gradually create all these charismatic all this cataclysm, weather cataclysms, and to create a really, it's like a Trojan horse, really, to depopulate the world, making us believe.
Let me say this. That was our first caller. I mean, everybody's entitled to an opinion, but for gosh sake, in a time when everybody is saying that all the scientists are saying that the direct emissions from fossil fuels are the cause of climate change and global warming, I don't really want to debate that science right now. I got a call from Betty in Redondo. Can you take that one?
Hello.
Hello, Betty. What's on your mind?
I'm so happy you're doing the diet. I'm doing it too.
What are you doing, Betty?
I'm going to go on a sugar-free, flour-free, really organic diet. Back to basics. I am hooked up with a healer for the next 4 weeks who's going to help me with that. So I'm not really sure yet. But I'll keep you posted.
Is it okay? You want to tell me your start weight?
I'm about 175, and I am 5'1.5".
Okay, so you got work to do. Do you walk?
No, honey, I can't. I have sciatica.
Yeah, so you're caught in a real bad cycle. I know sciatica is a mother. I've had it. It's just, if people don't know what it is, it's pain shooting down the side of your leg, it comes off the spine. Call in and let me know how you're doing. Let me ask you this. Have you done diets before?
Never.
Well, let me tell you what I think. And let me know, and you'll call back and let me see. So your start weight is 175?
Yeah.
All right, just write it down. All you have to do is get to 174. I mean it. That's the, you know what I mean? When you get to 173 and stay there for a while, and then, you know, because you're not going to go down, you're going to go down slow, right?
Right.
So try this. You're going to go on a sugar-free, and what's the other main category?
Flour-free.
All right. You know, my experience is any diet works. I mean it. If that's the one you want, stick to it and call me back next week.
I definitely will. I need to tell you two more quick things.
Sure, sure. Please, please, of course.
I just want to applaud you for the fabulous shows you did on Julian Bond. I loved him so much, and I just wanted to let you know that the poor class whites first heard about Julian Bond on Saturday Night Live. He was Gilda Radner's hero. When Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Gilda Radner were on the show, and that cast had him on a number of times back in the day. And if I hadn't been watching Saturday Night Live, I never would have heard about Julian Bond.
Well, that's funny. I'm going to move on, but let me tell you, thank you so much. You know,
I need one more question.
Because there's other listeners. You did great. Listen, I just want to say that it's still, I think about it all the time. Julian Bond died at 75. You can go up on the show, voicesfromthefrontlines.com, and download the interview. I'm still very visibly shaken for reasons I don't fully know, because I saw him in Mississippi in 2014. such a strikingly handsome, beautiful man. It's a fun interview. If you listen to the dynamics between the two of us, is a great deal of affection. I mean, I'm a 50-year veteran. He's a 50-year veteran, but let's be very clear. I was a private in the Army, and he was a general. But nonetheless, thank you so much for the call. I want to end with this. So if you like the singing, and you like the concept, because I'm trying to add some different things, do email me at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines. If you don't like the singing, I'm still going to sing, but, you know, let me know. If you have songs you want to sing along with, eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. If you're not on our list, go on www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, because we put out a very nice, Channy Martinez is our producer, we put it out every week. It lets you know every Tuesday what we're going to do, and it gives you a sense of that you're part of this, you know, online community. If you want to go on a diet, and seriously, and you just want to talk about your diet, I'm just doing it because it's part of the revolution. I think we want to take care of our health. It gives me I'm going to have to be very honest every week and do my own weigh-in. So I, as the president of the Revolutionary Weight Warriors, my goal next week is to try to get under 220. I was 221, I'll say 0.8 today. Next week is a fun drive. I will be here as part of the fun drive, encouraging you. I have some interesting ideas about premiums. I have a book coming out. The book is called Katrina's Legacy, The Black Nation, The Black Latino Alliance, The Indigenous Peoples Movement, The Third Reconstruction, and the Nations of Africa, Asia, and Latin America Confront the U.S. White Imperialist Settler State and its Climate Crimes. We're going to be having a book opening in very late November. I'll let you know where it's going to be, and I hope you can come. So do stay in touch with us, and I'm going to thank you all for being on the show. G, we're going to get out. Let's play some music. I want to thank G, our engineer, board operator, and soulful watcher of the show. I want to thank a lot of you for listening. I want to thank Robin Kelly for the wonderful interview that he did. I want to thank the parents of Diet High School for the wonderful interviews that they did on the last shows. So go on our site, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Download something. And yes, email me at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. I'd love to hear from you. I will get back to you. As they say, all power to the people.